Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Today, we hear reports from Mario Ritter, Alice Bryant, Brian Lynn, and me. Here's Mario Ritter.
In villages and towns in many places in Europe, Sunday will have a special importance. The 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month will mark 100 years since the end of World War I. That war affected almost all of Europe and many places around the world. It resulted in the collapse of three European empires and cost tens of millions of lives. The conflict was so large that people at the time could not imagine another war. They called it the War to End All Wars. The area called La Chaîne Tendue is deep in the Argonne Forest. It still has signs of the fighting. German soldiers dug long, narrow holes there in an effort against Allied forces, including Americans. Randy Gulke has researched the American military history of World War I. He has studied how American forces helped bring an end to the war. He points to many remains that can be found in the Argonne Forest from that time.
The Americans would have been coming up from the other side, the 28th Division, the Pennsylvanians, would have been coming up trying to gain a foothold on this plateau.
On high ground in the area, there is a burial place for German soldiers. The conflict caused a huge loss of life. More than 8 million armed forces alone were killed. However, unlike France, German territory was not damaged in World War I. William Philpott is a professor of military history at King's College London. He said Germany did not receive the heavy bombing that it would face in World War II. The Allied powers negotiated several peace treaties after the war. Yet they left Europe dangerously unbalanced. Philpott notes that Europe lost ruling families of three major areas: the Romanovs in Russia, the Habsburgs in Austria-Hungary, and the Hohenzollerns in Germany. Under the peace treaties, Germany was forced to make huge payments to France. Its colonies were taken away and its territory divided. The result brought economic crisis and anger that aided the rise of Adolf Hitler. Philpott said that when the Nazi Party came to power in Germany, it stopped making payments to France. It also refused to observe disarmament requirements under the Treaty of Versailles, which ended World War I. World War II resulted in an even larger loss of life and the destruction of much of Germany's industrial areas. The country was split into West Germany, which was controlled by the Allies, and East Germany, which was controlled by the Soviet Union. German historian Marcus Klauer said West Germany worked to overcome its problems after the war.
We had the chance to rebuild everything from the scratch. So in the 1960s and 70s, we had the great advantage to have a powerful industry once more.
Philpott said in time, Germany developed into an important force bringing Europe together. In 1989, the two Germanies united. The nation also worked closely with France and other nations to develop what would become the European Union. Clauer said the nation learned a great deal from the experiences of conflict, that no nation in Europe can stand alone, he said.
During the fall, Xisis kiru is more likely to be picking crocus flowers in northern Greece than to be in his office at work. But he is not doing so for fun. It is profitable. Kiru, who is 34, gathers crocuses outside his hometown of Krokos to produce the spice saffron. Spices are used to improve the taste of foods, and saffron is a favorite. People pay so much money for it that it is often called red gold. Saffron has brought jobs and money to an area of Greece that is better known for coal mines and unemployment. A year ago, area saffron producers began exporting to the United States. Now they are looking to China. Most of the saffron producers are young Greeks who could not find jobs during Greece's 9-year economic crisis. They began farming as a result. It was hard to find work in your field during the crisis, particularly in civil engineering, because there was no construction, Kiru said. In 2012, Kiru returned to Greece from London with 2 university degrees. He opened an engineering office in his village of Krokos, but he makes more money from his 1.6 hectares of land. I didn't imagine I'd return, he said, but it was a decision I don't regret. Krokos gets its name from the flower, and the area surrounding the town has been growing crocus flowers for 300 years. But until 2000, saffron production was limited to 30 kilograms a year for sale within the country, said Nikos Patsioras, head of Greece's Cooperative of Saffron. That changed with the 2008 international economic crisis, which became the Great Recession. Greece began increasing saffron production, now making about 4 tons a year. 70% of that is exported. A lot of young people found work in the fields, scientists, Patsioras said. I believe more will join. Signs of economic hardship can be seen throughout Krokos. Many stores that line the streets are permanently closed. Unemployment in northwestern Greece is at 23.5%. But the fields are busy places of industry. We have God on our side, who gave us such a unique product, Patsioras said. Saffron grows in many countries. Greece markets its as Krokos Kozanis. 1 gram costs about 4 euros in Greek stores. It takes about 150,000 flowers to make a kilogram of the spice, which sells for about 1,500 euros. Flowers are gathered by hand. Women of the cooperative weigh and package the spice. Iran is by far the world's biggest saffron producer. But demand for the Greek kind is rising, Patsioras said. Greece is in talks with China to begin exporting its product there in 2019.
Family members and allies of two former Thai leaders announced formation of a new political party this week. The party was launched Wednesday in Bangkok. Its leaders are relatives and supporters of Thaksin Shinawat and his sister Yingluck Shinawat. Each served as Thailand's prime minister in recent years until they were ousted. Formation of the new Thai Raksachart Party comes months before planned general elections. Thailand's military government has promised to hold the vote between February and May 2019. Thailand's last general election was held in 2011, when Yingluck Shinawat, head of the Pua Thai Party, was chosen as prime minister. She and her government were ousted from power in 2014. Thaksin Shinawat was overthrown when the military seized power in 2006. Since then, he has lived in self-imposed exile. In 2008, a Thai court found Thaksin guilty of violating the country's anti-corruption law. He never returned to Thailand to his trial, which he said was carried out for political reasons. He faces separate corruption charges brought in 2008 and 2012. Yingluck Shinawat fled Thailand in August 2017, just before a court found her guilty of criminal negligence. She was given a 5-year jail sentence. Like her brother, she did not attend her trial. The 2019 elections will put supporters of Thailand's military and ruling family against populist forces led by the Pua Thai Party. Political observers see the formation of the new party as part of an alliance aimed at winning more seats in the vote. The Thai Raksachart Party will be led by Prichapol Pongponik, a former member of parliament with the Pua Thai Party. The leadership includes Thaksin and Yingluck's nephew and niece, as well as a younger generation of political allies. I'm Brian Lin.
Many VOA Learning English stories and programs use the words sentence and statement. But what exactly does each word mean? Are there differences between the two? This week, our question comes from Armando. Here it is.
What's the difference between sentence and statement, and how can I use them?
Hello, Armando. I am glad you asked that question. The answer will help a lot of English learners. First, think of a sentence as a tree and the three kinds of sentences as tree branches. One branch is a statement. Another is a question. Yet another is a command. A sentence is a group of words that usually have a subject, verb, and information about the subject. Remember, a sentence can be a statement, question, or command. A statement is a basic fact or opinion. It is one kind of sentence. It usually ends with a period or exclamation point. To make this clearer, here are examples of the three types of sentences. The first one is a statement.
Armando studies English every day.
Now, here is the same sentence as a question.
Does Armando study English every day?
And finally, here is the sentence as a command.
Study English every day.
But wait, where did the subject Armando go in the command? We do not include subjects in commands. They are understood without being said. Now, let's turn to the part of the question about when to use statement or sentence. Here is a way to keep it simple. You can avoid the word statement unless you are speaking or writing about something formal, such as written or spoken information from a government official. English teachers sometimes use the word statement, but thankfully, you don't have to. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Alice Bryant.
Next up is American Stories. Here is Shep O'Neill with Feather Top by Nathaniel Hawthorne.
The long cold winter was gone at last. At first, the cold nights went away slowly. Then, suddenly, the warm days of spring started to come. There was new life again in the earth. Things started to grow and come up. For the first time, green corn plants began to show. They pushed through the soil and could now be seen above the ground. After the long winter months, the crows, the big black birds, were hungry. And when they saw the little green plants, they flew down to eat them. Old Mother Rigby tried to make the noisy and hungry birds go away. They made her very angry. She did not want the blackbirds to eat her corn, but the birds would not go away. So, early one morning, just as the sun started to rise, Mother Rigby jumped out of bed. She had a plan to stop those blackbirds from eating her corn. Mother Rigby could do anything. She was a witch, a woman with strange powers. She could make water run uphill or change a beautiful woman into a white horse. Many nights, when the moon was full and bright, she could be seen flying over the tops of the houses in the village, sitting on a long wooden stick. It was a broomstick, and it helped her to do all sorts of strange tricks. Mother Rigby ate a quick breakfast and then started to work on her broomstick. She was planning to make something that would look like a man. It would fill the birds with fear and scare them from eating her corn, the way most farmers protect themselves from those black, pesky birds. Mother Rigby worked quickly. She held her magic broomstick straight and then tied another piece of wood across it. And already It began to look like a man, with arms. Then she made the head. She put a pumpkin, a vegetable the size of a football, on top of the broomstick. She made two small holes in the pumpkin for eyes, and made another cut, lower down, that looked just like a mouth. At last, there he was. He seemed ready to go to work for Mother Rigby and stop those old birds from eating her corn. But Mother Rigby was not happy with what she made. She wanted to make her scarecrow look better and better, for she was a good worker. She made a purple coat and put it around her scarecrow and dressed it in white silk stockings. She covered him with false hair and an old hat. And in that hat, she stuck the feather of a bird. She examined him closely and decided she liked him much better now, dressed up in a beautiful coat with a fine feather on top of his hat, and she named him Feathertop. She looked at Feathertop and laughed with happiness. "He is a beauty," she thought. "Now what?" she thought, feeling troubled again. She felt that Feathertop looked too good to be a scarecrow. "He can do something better," she thought, "than just stand near the corn all summer and scare the crows." And she decided on another plan for Feathertop. She took the pipe of tobacco she was smoking and put it into the mouth of Feathertop. "Puff, darling, puff," she said to Feathertop. "Puff away, my fine fellow. It is your life." Smoke started to rise from Feathertop's mouth. At first, it was just a little smoke, but Feathertop worked hard, blowing and puffing, and more smoke came out of him. "Puff away, my pet," Mother Rigby said with happiness. "Puff away, my pretty one. Puff for your life, I tell you." Mother Rigby then ordered Feathertop to walk. "Go forward," she said. "You have a world before you." Feathertop put one hand out in front of him, trying to find something for support. At the same time, he pushed one foot forward with great difficulty. But Mother Rigby shouted and ordered him on, and soon he began to go forward. Then she said, "You look like a man, and you walk like a man. Now I order you to talk like a man." Feathertop gasped, struggled, and at last said in a small whisper, "Mother, I want to speak, but I have no brain. What can I say?"
"Ah, you can speak," Mother Rigby answered. "What shall you say? Have no fear. When you go out into the world, you will say 1,000 things and say them 1,000 times. And saying them 1,000 times again and again, you still will be saying nothing. So just talk. Babble like a bird. Certainly you have enough of a brain for that."
Mother Rigby gave Feathertop much money and said,
"Now you are as good as any of them and can hold your head high with importance.
But she told Feathertop that he must never lose his pipe and must never let it stop smoking. She warned him that if his pipe ever stopped smoking, he would fall down and become just a bundle of sticks again. "Have no fear, Mother," Feathertop said in a big voice, and blew a big cloud of smoke out of his mouth. "On your way," Mother Rigby said, pushing Feathertop out the door. "The world is yours, and if anybody asks you for your name, just say Feathertop. For you have a feather in your hat and a handful of feathers in your empty head." Feathertop found the streets in town, and many people started to look at him. They looked at his beautiful purple coat and his white silk stockings, and at the pipe he carried in his left hand, which he put back into his mouth every 5 steps he walked. They thought that he was a visitor of great importance. "What a fine, noble face," one man said. "He surely is somebody," said another. "A great leader of men." As Feathertop walked along one of the quieter streets near the edge of town, he saw a very pretty girl standing in front of a small red brick house. A little boy was standing next to her. The pretty girl smiled at Feathertop, and love entered her heart. It made her whole face bright with sunlight. Feathertop looked at her and had a feeling he never knew before. Suddenly, everything seemed a little different to him. The air was filled with a strange excitement. The sunlight glowed along the road, and people seemed to dance as they moved through the streets. Feathertop could not stop himself and walked toward the pretty, smiling young girl. As he got closer, the little boy at her side pointed his finger at Feathertop and said, "Look, Polly, the man has no face. It is a pumpkin." Feathertop moved no closer, but turned around and hurried through the streets of the town toward his home. When Mother Rigby opened the door, she saw Feathertop shaking with emotion. He was puffing on his pipe with great difficulty and making sounds like the clatter of sticks or the rattling of bones. "What's wrong?" Mother Rigby asked. "I am nothing, Mother. I am not a man. I am just a puff of smoke. I want to be something more than just a puff of smoke." And Feathertop took his pipe and with all his strength smashed it against the floor. He fell down and became a bundle of sticks as his pumpkin face rolled toward the wall. "Poor Feathertop," Mother Rigby said, looking at the heap on the floor. "He was too good to be a scarecrow, and he was too good to be a man. But he will be happier, standing near the corn all summer and protecting it from the birds. So I will make him a scarecrow again."
That's our show for today. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.